I want to encourage you to have your Old Testaments open to 1 Samuel 2. 1 Samuel chapter 2 is where we're going to spend all of our time on this particular occasion this morning. And I want to encourage you to give attention to the Word of God as we study it this morning and to pay careful attention, especially to what we will be talking about today. And while you're turning there, let me say that I appreciate all of you that are here, and especially to those of you that make the extra effort. I am immensely grateful that you have chosen to spend it with us today. Thank God for the opportunity that we always have to worship Him and serve Him as He gives us. 1 Samuel 2, let's begin reading in verse 1. Hannah prayed and said, "My heart exalts in Yahweh, my horn is exalted in Yahweh. My mouth speaks boldly against my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. There is no one holy like Yahweh. Indeed, there is no one besides you, nor is there any rock like our God. Boast no more so very proudly. Do not let arrogance come out of your mouth. For Yahweh is a God of knowledge, and with Him, actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty are shattered, but the feeble gird on strength. Those who were full hire themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry cease to hunger. Even the barren gives birth to seven, but she who has many children languishes. Yahweh kills and makes alive. He brings down to Sheol and He raises up. Yahweh makes poor and rich. He brings low. He also exalts. He raises the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with nobles and inherit the seats of honor. For the pillars of the earth are Yahweh's, and He sets the world on them. He keeps the feet of His godly ones, but the wicked ones are silenced in darkness. For not by might shall a man prevail. Those who contend with Yahweh will be shattered. Against them He will thunder in the heavens. For Yahweh will judge the ends of the earth. He will give strength to His king, and He will exalt the horn of His anointed." Hannah was one of two wives of a man named Elkanah. We read of that in 1 Samuel 1. And she did not have any children. She was barren, and so she prayed to God in chapter 1 that God would open up her womb. "Please, God, give me children." And so it came about in the course of time that God granted her request, and there is no doubt then that she was thrilled to hold her baby boy, Samuel, her very first child. Something that seemed impossible had suddenly become a reality because of God, prayer, and her zeal. And as a Christian might expect, overwhelmed with joy and happiness, she pours out a prayer of thanksgiving to God in chapter 2, which is what we just read. A song of praise, what I have chosen to call a Magnificat, Hannah's Magnificat. She does not shy away from giving praise to Yahweh, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And by magnifying His name and His abilities, notice all that is said explicitly in this Magnificat. There is an immense amount of information and lessons that we can extract from this song of praise, but I want for us to focus on something particular, the most important theme of these verses, and that is the preeminence of Yahweh, the superiority of God, the greatness, the awesomeness, the majesty of Yahweh. I think there are three clear things that we see about this God we call Yahweh. Three things that are absolutely abundantly clear. It is not up for debate. It is not up for argument. And the first one is Yahweh's unparalleled nature. Read with me again in verses 1 through 3. Hannah prayed and said, "My heart exults in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth speaks boldly because of my enemies, and I rejoice in your salvation." There's a couple things I want you to notice just from verse 1. Hannah begins this prayer, this song, this Magnificat. And notice that she speaks of herself in the first person repeatedly in verse 1. My heart exults. My horn is in the Lord. My mouth, because I rejoice. As you begin to read this prayer and you delve into analyze what it's all about, you might think that Hannah is really trying to make it all about herself because of the use of the pronouns, my and I. It's all about her in verse 1, right? Well, she does not want to make the prayer about herself. She is simply overwhelmed with emotion, as naturally we would all be after a circumstance that has taken place, like what has happened to her. And notice that this is done immediately at the beginning. She is wanting to get this out of the way because the prayer is not about her. The song is not about her. The Magnificat is not about her. She says what she has to say from her emotion, from her onset, the feeling of happiness and joy that she has gotten, that she has been able to feel for the first time in her life, holding this baby that she thought she would have never been able to conceive. Well, she wants to get that out of the way because it's not about her. She does not want this prayer, this song, to become about her. No, the focus is instead on Yahweh. Notice that in verse 1, she is thrilled, she is overjoyed, she is thankful about what God has done for her, not anything that she has done. Yes, she uses the pronouns my three times and I once, but they are all referencing the object of her thrilling experience, God, not anything that she did. But what God has done for her. And so the rest of the song after verse 1 turns completely to focus on Yahweh. He is exalted. He is magnified with respect to his unparalleled nature. That is the essence of the first three verses of Hannah's Magnificat. His unparalleled nature. And I chose the word unparalleled. Do you know why? Because it aptly describes God's nature. The word unparalleled means he is unique. He is unrivaled. He is unsurpassed. He is exceptional. And I am proud to say this morning that that is the God I serve. Are you? He is unparalleled in his nature. In verse 2, there is no one holy like Yahweh. Indeed, there is no one besides you. There is no one as holy. And that word holy, I don't know that we can give it much justice. But the word means to be separated, to be completely set apart from the entirety of everything else. I mean, we can look at the creation as we talked about last week, and we can be awed by snow falling from the sky. We can be awed by a shooting star flashing across the sky. But this God, Yahweh, no, he is far above even that. He is unique. There is no one like him. He is unmatched. He is insurmountable. And this is both striking and pertinent to the narrative of this book. 1 and 2 Samuel, you know why? Because the primary enemy of the Israelite nation in this book is the Philistines. And oh, they held their god Dagon in high esteem. They thought Dagon was the god. They thought there was no other god like Dagon. Well, in 1 Samuel chapter 5, when the ark is taken into Philistine territory and into the temple where Dagon is sitting, the next morning the Philistines get up and they go into their temple and they notice that Dagon has fallen on his head to worship this god, Yahweh. And they pick him up and they put him back up there. Well, the next morning they come in, and Dagon is back on the floor, bowing before Yahweh. And this time, his hands are chopped off. Is Dagon unmatched? Is he unrivaled? Is he unique? No! He's just a piece of statue! He's just a piece of stone! But this God, he does not dwell in temples made with hands, as the Apostle Paul says. Behold, the highest heaven cannot contain you, Solomon says. That's Yahweh. He is unparalleled. And the fact that he is unmatched, that he is insurmountable, is what is being said by the latter part of verse 2. There is no rock like God. He is strong. He is safe, he is secure, and he is 100% reliable. And this reminds me of the song, the 19th century hymn by Edward Mote, "The Solid Rock." In the chorus of that hymn, it says, "My hope is built on nothing less." That's how the song begins. But in the chorus it says, "On Christ, a solid rock, we stand, no other ground, because all other ground is sinking sand." Well, that's Yahweh. That's the God that we serve. He is a solid rock. He is complete safety, security, and 100% reliability. And so I don't know every single problem that's going on in your life right now. And as human beings, we undergo problems a lot of times. But if you're having marriage issues, turn to the rock. If you're having financial issues, turn to the rock. If you're having health issues, turn to the rock. If you're having physical and mental and emotional issues that you think cannot be taken care of, turn to the rock. Don't go anywhere else. Let this be your first option. He is unmatched and he is unparalleled. In verse 3, notice what Hannah says, "Boast no more." She condemns pride and arrogance in the face of this unparalleled, unrivaled, and holy God. And this might be a subtle hint at her rival Peninnah in 1 Samuel 1, verse 6. This was the other wife. And in verse 6 of 1 Samuel 1, her rival would provoke her bitterly to irritate her because she could not give birth. And meanwhile, Peninnah, she has all these children. And so she's saying to Hannah, "Ha! You can't give birth." Well, maybe this might be a subtle hint at her arrogance. And I'll tell you that pride usually comes from knowledge. The Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians 8, verse 1, knowledge puffs up, makes you arrogant. And if we're not careful, we can all get into that position. But Hannah says, "Do not let arrogance come out of your mouth, for the Lord, for Yahweh is a God of knowledge. With him actions are weighed." Next to this God, it doesn't matter how many master's degrees we have, how many PhDs we get, we know nothing. I referenced this in the Bible class towards the end, but I'll say it again. 34 chapters of the book of Job are five people engaging in highly philosophical and self-defending conversations. I know what I'm talking about. and you don't know nothing. Well, God enters the scene in chapter 38. And his response is, who is this that darkens counsel without words of knowledge? Were you there when I laid the foundation of the earth? Can you bind Pleiades and Orion? Can you tip the water jars of heaven? In comparison to Yahweh, we know nothing. And I'll tell you when it is that we begin to fall into this trap is when we think we got it figured out. But we know nothing. And I found out at a very early age that there was always someone who knew more than me. So even if you know a lot, trust me, there's somebody who knows more than you. And that's always a good reminder to stay humble. But to realize that next to God, we know nothing. And God will be sure to weigh our actions. He will hold everyone accountable for what they've done. His nature is unparalleled. He is unrivaled. He is unmatched. He is unique. He is insurmountable. The preeminence of God, the superiority of God, his greatness is seen in his unparalleled nature. Number two, the preeminence of God is seen in Yahweh's formidable reversals. And this is the second section of the Magnificat, of Hannah's song of praise, which at length, this is the longest part of the praise of the song, and it deals with his formidable reversals. Yahweh is now noted for his formidable reversals. Can I say that again? His formidable reversals. And I have chosen that word for a reason. The word formidable means to inspire or give great fear or respect through being impressively large, powerful, intense, and capable. That is the God we serve. He is so big, so powerful, and extremely capable that he can do things the likes we will never be able to do and the likes which we have never even thought of. And that's exactly what verses 4 to 8 is about. The bows or the bows, this is their strength, their military might. The military strength of the mighty ones, they are shattered. But the feeble gird on strength. Those who were full hire themselves out for bread. But those who were hungry cease to hunger. Even the barren gives birth to seven, and she who has children languishes. I want you to notice in verses 4 and 5 that Yahweh is not specifically mentioned, but even though he's not specifically mentioned, he is the cause for these reversals. Make no mistake about it. The strength of the mighty is broken, and the weak ones, they take up strength. In verse 5, Hannah says, those who have plenty of food one day may the next day find themselves hungry, in hiring themselves out as slaves in order to eat. And the ones who have nothing on a certain day may be filled with a lot the next. And the very personal illustration there, she says, even the barren woman gives birth to seven. And the idea is that that woman is capable of having a complete family. Not seven individual kids, but a complete family. And I can't help but think, again, that she is subtly hinting at Penina. She has kids. Penina does. She's never struggled to give birth. Yet, she may not be happy. She may not be satisfied. She may not have peace, be at peace. Why? Because this isn't the God she's serving. Hannah says, you're my God. You're the God I serve. with this unparalleled, formidable God, what we call normal is never what it really is. I mean, we may think things are normal, but with this God, normal goes out the door because he is fully capable, there's that word, of conducting actions beyond human comprehension and explanation. God holds the world in his hands. Not just the United States, not just Latin America, not just Canada, the whole world is in his hands. All human souls, the fate of all souls depend on him. In verse 6, Yahweh kills and makes alive. He brings down to Sheol and he raises up. God holds the power over life and death. Surely there's no two things that are completely far apart, yet that one person would have control over two of them. Nobody but God alone can say that. He can both kill and he can resurrect. And this further emphasizes his power and control over human life. Notice in verse 7 that he makes poor and he makes rich. He brings low and he also exalts. He has the ability to make a man rich and poor. And he can humiliate, hear me out, the socially significant and exalt the socially insignificant. Normal is never what we think it to be with this God. Because on a given day, on a given circumstance, human fortunes can change. Did you see that there? The poor and the needy in verse 8 who are looked down upon. Notice that they are in the dust. They're in the ash heap. They're in the scum of the earth. That's who they are. Well, Yahweh can take these very ones and he can put them in the seats of honor. He makes them sit with nobles and the kings. Why? Well, the simple answer is because he owns and he runs everything. Do we really need a detailed answer than that? God owns everything and he runs everything the way he sees fit. He is the creator. He is the sustainer. And ultimately this is seen in his formidable reversals. You ever seen something so scary that it just puts the fear of God in you, right? We talk about that. A parent that's so mad and angry and they say to their child, I'm going to put the fear of God in you. Ever been there? Well, these reversals that Hannah talks about, they are for one reason stated that we, through seeing these reversals and the power that this God has, the only logical conclusion that we can come to is that we fear him. But not just fear him, but that we serve him. And isn't that what Hannah is doing in chapter 2? The preeminence of God is seen in his formidable reversals. Number 3, the preeminence of God is seen in Yahweh's universal sovereignty. Two verses is all it takes, but two verses is a lot to talk about God's sovereignty. He is supreme ruler over all the nations and over all peoples across the universe. Notice that in verse 8, towards the end, the pillars of the earth are the Lord's. He set the world on them. He keeps the feet of his godly ones, but the wicked ones are silenced in darkness. His rule His dominion is not limited by borders or city jurisdictions. That's not the God that we serve. And that's not the God of the Bible. Yes, the God of the Bible is the God of Israel, don't get me wrong. But he is also the God of Assyria. He is also the God of Babylon. He is also the God of every single nation that we can ever think of and dream of. He is universal in reign. To all those who cling to him, you cling to something that is safe and secure, which is what? That rock. The rock that is God. If you cling to that rock that is God, then he will ensure they are taken care of. He keeps the feet of his godly ones. And I can imagine Hannah. I mean, for years she has probably been depressed. Questioning, why can't I give birth? And here you have the other wife of her husband who ridicules her and mocks her and irritates her every day. Ha! I'm better than you. You can't give birth, but I can. Well, she's held on. And she's prayed. And truly, this verse, I can imagine she sees it as a confirmation of her own faith in God. That she has held on to this rock. That she has thrown herself completely at this rock that is God. And he has kept her feet stable. Just as God is able to stabilize the earth in verse 8, he is also able to stabilize the feet of his godly ones. How blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the path of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers. His delight is in the law of the Lord. In his law he meditates day and night. He will be like a tree firmly planted by streams of waters. Firmly planted, if we turn to that rock. And I'll tell you this, it does not matter where they are, these godly ones. They could be here, and they could be all the way across the earth. And it does not matter which country they're part of, what their genetic makeup is, and what they have done. If they imitate Yahweh, if your goal is to imitate this God, if you cast your undying, unwavering loyalty to this God, he will make sure that you're kept secure and stable, like Hannah was. Those who do not, well, Hannah says they are the wicked ones. And their actions will be weighed. God will hold us accountable. And their end is to be silence in darkness. And this directly correlates with those who are arrogant, those who think they know better than God. Those who stand and spit in the face of Yahweh and say, no, we don't want you, we want us. Because we have it all figured out. No. Those who mock this God, those who deny this God, those who reject this God, they will be silenced and shut up in darkness because Yahweh has universal sovereignty. You cannot run and you cannot hide from him. Notice at the end of verse 9 what she says. For not by might shall a man prevail. Sometimes, depending on who we're surrounded with, the extent to which we've been blessed and the success that we have, we may feel like we are untouchable and invincible. Well, those are the people God looks at and he says, it's time for a humility demonstration. And usually, it's not one that they want. man cannot prevail by themselves. If man should prevail, it will not be because of anything he has done, but because of what God has done for him. Because God has kept their feet, guided their ways, and approved of their deeds. Without Yahweh, man is unstable, unidentifiable, and unrecoverable. He is unstable. There is no ground that will be safe for him ever. He is not known by God. He is unidentifiable. And ultimately, he goes to what we call the point of no return, unrecoverable. And those are the three biggest mistakes everybody makes every day in this world, because we do not trust and cast our loyalty to this God. In verse 10, Hannah appropriately says that those who want to take their chances. Well, you say, well, I'll take my chances with him. And I think we've met a couple people like that in our past, in our history. I'll take my chances. Well, Hannah says those who take their chances with him, they will be broken. They will be shattered. They will be destroyed. God controls the fate of all men. And while for a time we may be able to do as we please, know that for everything God will bring it into judgment. His eyes move to and from the entire earth. That's universal sovereignty. He can be here at one moment and be all together in New Zealand at the same time. He is everywhere. His influence is everywhere. But his power and control is also everywhere. It is ever present. Yahweh's universal sovereignty is ultimately seen in his ability to install kings. The Lord will judge the ends of the earth, and he will give strength to his king. He sets up the rulers, the man or the woman who thinks that they have power because of something they have done, or they have power because of the masses that went to vote. Well, that's partly true, but not all the way true. Their power comes from this universal sovereign God. And Nebuchadnezzar learned that the hard way. Nebuchadnezzar thought, my power comes from myself. It comes from my strength. He thought that he could prevail without God. And Daniel said to him, Yahweh gives the kingdom to whom he wishes. He is universally sovereign, and he controls the kingdom of all man. He controls the government. He controls our politics. He controls everything. And everything that we ultimately have comes from him. And what is our part? Well, we ought to ensure that we turn to him for guidance and wisdom, because with him we can accomplish much. With him we can be stable. We have an identity, and we can actually go somewhere in life. But without him, God have mercy on your soul. And God have mercy on the soul of all those who think that they can live without him, and who think they can succeed without him. They are doomed to failure, finish, and fire. The preeminence of God is seen in his universal sovereignty. Hannah's magnificent. Sometimes we have the tendency in our prayers to make it about ourselves. And that's not bad in and of itself. We want things done for us. We want requests to be answered on our behalf. And that's all good. But sometimes we need to just step aside and, like Hannah, praise God for who he is. Thank him for who he is and what he's done. He is unparalleled. He is formidable, and his ability to reverse everything shows us the power that he has and his universal control over the fate of man. And I want to tell you, you may be here today and you may think that you have problems that nobody can solve. You may think that the things that you're going through in your life are so great that nobody can take care of them. And you're just going to fight this on your own. And you're going to fight it with your family and your friends. You don't have to. You don't need to. The rock that is God, he is steady, he is sure. And like he has pulled Hannah out of that barren state. I mean, she could not give birth. Have you ever heard of somebody like that? And then in one moment gives birth to six kids? God can do the same thing for you. He can take your sin and remove it far away, and you can be a completely new person. And the blessings that will come thereafter, is that something you want to refuse? The choice is yours while we stand and sing.